You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program, our live broadcast for the evening of Saturday, May 24th. I am back in town, in the radio station, in our studio, here in Memphis, and I am joined by none other than Keith Alexander the Great. Had a great family vacation last week. I sure did, with my wife and daughter, and if I could, I'm sure Keith knows what I'm going to share because I shared it with him as soon as he walked in. But if I could make a momentary departure before we begin the show in earnest this evening. Of course, as you know, my extended family exists out there. To those who are fans of this radio program, those who support our work, whether they're listening on one of the terrestrial AM or FM radio stations in select markets across the country tonight, or on the internet where we're a national phenomenon, or around the world, or however you're listening, on the phone. Doesn't matter. Our listeners, our audience is certainly part of our extended family. So when we have family news, I like to share it with everyone because we have that familial bond with one another. And it just so happens that, as you know, my wife is expecting our second child, and we had a pretty interesting afternoon. My wife's best friend found out that you can have a certified ultrasound technician come to your home and you can build a little party around the revealing of the gender of the child. And so that's exactly what we did after returning from our vacation. We immediately got the house together and we had our closest relatives and some friends here in the Memphis area, mostly my wife's friends. I guess this kind of a get together is geared more for females, but it was a lot of females in the house today. And she came over and set up her table and her equipment and revealed to all of us. My wife and I actually learned the sex of our child with all of our the people that were gathered there at the house. And I found out today, folks, that I will be the father of a son. God willing, it is a boy, and we will meet him in November. And I was joking with Sam Bushman just before the show started. I think my wife and our family could be entered into a carnival now as a certified politically incorrect show. You could see a real live nuclear family with a working dad and a stay-at-home mom, a boy, a soon-to-be-a boy, and a girl. Of course, we have a daughter, Isabel, who's four. And so anyway, folks, I'm really excited. I got a chance to take that in this afternoon at about 3 o'clock, and I enjoyed that immensely. You know, I really wanted a boy the first time around, and then after it was a girl, I couldn't have been more excited. You know, the moment they told me the first time that it was a girl, you know, that was just what it was, and I was so happy about that. And then after having raised a daughter for 4 years, I was really kind of neutral this time. I knew how great it was to have a daughter, and so I wasn't, I really was ambivalent. I just wanted it to be healthy, of course, and even if it wasn't healthy, you know, we would have loved it just the same, God knows. But I really didn't care so much. You know, I still kind of skewed toward a boy. I think every man wants to sire a son. And that's what we got today. And it was just a great, great afternoon. And then to come back here and be able to do this show is incredible. But I look forward to raising him to be a Southerner, a gentleman, a Christian, a real man. And anyway, get on the show. There's nothing I could talk about that pleases me more than that. And Keith, as I toss it over to you, the father of three sons, you know a lot more about it than I do.
Well, you're in for a wild ride. I tell you what, you had your last night of uninterrupted sleep, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I gave that up a while back.
But I tell you what, there's nothing more satisfying to do in the world than to raise children, and there's nothing more challenging in today's world, unfortunately, particularly in today's America, with the combined forces of liberalism in the private sector and in the government trying to undermine your best efforts to raise a God-fearing, you know, mannerly, proper person as a child. It's, you know, you've got this politically correct coloring book here. The Democrats want to raise your children, it says on the front cover, and that's exactly right. You know, basically, they're trying to take all of the normal parental duties away from the natural parents and put them in various government agencies now. So good luck, but it's a daunting task, but I know you're up to it, Jay.
That's right. We've done well, I think, if I do say so myself, with the first one, Isabel, who had turned 4 in March, and then the new child, we'll go ahead and tell you the name. We had picked the name for either boy or girl, and this one will be Henry McGregor, McGregor being the my maternal grandparents' name, my mother's maiden name. Henry we like, for Patrick Henry, of course, another reason, it's just a strong European name, a manly name, and McGregor caters to our Scots side, the Scottish side of our family tree. So Henry McGregor Edwards is scheduled for delivery on November the 4th or sometime thereabouts. So we'll keep you posted every second of the way. Thanks for indulging me there for a minute, folks, before we get started tonight. But, you know, stuff like that just can't be contained.
And I want to congratulate you for giving your child family names. You need to honor your ancestors, because your ancestors are the reason you're here and the reason you're in a position to pass on your genes. So everyone needs to think before they do anything, what would my great-grandfather or great-great-grandmother think of what I'm doing now? If we did that, a lot of what passes for politically correct behavior would be forbidden. For example, what would your grandparents think or your great-grandparents think about gay marriage, for example? That's a touchstone that we all need to use when it comes to determining our position on the various issues of the day, in my opinion.
Well, thank you for saying that, Keith. I do believe it's important to incorporate family names. My grandfather's name was James. My father's name is James, and I'm a James. So every man on my dad's side was named James, so that, you know, carried on, of course. Isabel, you know, our daughter, her middle name is Kay, K-A-Y-E. My mother's middle name is Kay, so she was named after her. And if we had had a girl, if we had found out today it was going to be a girl, the name was going to be either, we hadn't decided on the first name, but it was going to be either Charlotte or Caroline, and the middle name Louise. My wife's grandmother's name is Louise. So any way you slice it, it was going to have a family name incorporated into it. And I certainly think that was a point worth making, Keith.
Yeah, if you're not going to name your child after a relative, which is what I would recommend for anybody, one of your ancestors, then a biblical name. This current trend of naming children after the latest celebrity, I would discourage that at all costs, quite frankly.
Yeah, and all these new age names. You know, we were going through a baby book thinking with names, and we had a pretty good idea of what we were going to go with. But these new names like Apple, and, you know, women that are named with manly names, and you see that from time to time. Yeah, this stuff, these made up names with letters that don't really flow together, that shouldn't be together, and you see it all the time. And it's not just in one community, you see it across racial lines. I like strong, classic European names, work in a family name into it as well, and then you got the best of both worlds. We got to take a break, but I promise you, folks, we're going to talk about politics when we come back. But thank you for listening to me as we celebrate that here live on the radio tonight.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Right, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson, and it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
Well, I hope not. Now get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test, available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks, I'm afraid after that lively and uplifting opening segment, at least I hope you enjoyed it. I don't know if you enjoyed it or could enjoy it as much as I enjoyed delivering it, but work now must intrude. And we had a pretty good show last week. I know the audio quality with me not being in the studio last week was not 100%, but it was more than good enough, I think. And it was a great show. I really think, and I mean this in all sincerity, that Sam and Eddie really closed the show out strong in the third hour after my trip. I was able to listen to the entire show in the broadcast archives. Not to say that the first couple of hours were shabby, everything but they were. Second hour with Reverend Ted Pike talking about hate crimes and the double standards that are put forth in that arena, and then cyber hate, the possibility for so-called cyber hate laws where basically they'll just shut down anything on the internet that they don't like. It's all in the pipes, and you need to be aware of this. But the first hour was also exceptionally good when Keith Alexander the Great delivered his annual review on the travesty of jurisprudence that was the Brown versus Board of Education decision of 1954. We talked about why we oppose that, why any decent, constitutionally minded American should be against that. And I know, Keith, you want to offer a couple of parting shots on the issue of Brown that even in an hour last week we didn't get to cover.
Hey, you're right. You know, when you break it down, the ultimate problem with the Brown decision is that it marked the moment in history when the left discovered how to use the non-elected portion of the government, the part that is not subject to the will of the people, to affect political change and to wield sovereign power. These parts are specifically the bureaucracy and the federal judiciary. The federal judiciary, under the Constitution, is not elected, it's appointed, and it's subject to removal only for high crimes and misdemeanors, which is the standard for impeachment. So consequently, once you get a federal judge in, they're there till death do you part. And they can do just about anything they want to, and it's very difficult to get rid of them. I remember in the 50s and in the early 60s, there was a move to impeach Earl Warren, the then Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court when the Brown versus Topeka Board of Education decision was handed down. People recognize what a departure from the past the Brown decision was and what a travesty it was to have the Supreme Court of the United States setting social policy for the nation. But as our ancestors found out, there was darn little you could do about removing a Supreme Court justice or the Chief Justice. Likewise, with the rise of technocracy in the 1930s, that's government by experts, you have a government bureaucracy, a federal governmental bureaucracy in place that really doesn't change much regardless of whether you have a Republican or a Democratic administration in power. For example, people like Paul Wolfowitz, Douglas Feith, Richard Perle were all members of Clinton's State Department, and when George W. Bush, the Republican, replaced Bill Clinton, the Democrat, they just seamlessly moved over to become top presidential advisors. So it doesn't matter who is in charge, you have the same people actually pulling the strings and setting policy, and we've been following their policy in the Middle East basically since the mid-90s, and it's been a disastrous policy. It's been a policy that has gotten us involved in multi-billion dollar wars, bloodletting, and of an unparalleled scale, hemorrhaging of tax dollars, and nothing accomplished except making the United States even more unpopular than it was before under George H.W. Bush's administration. So this is what comes of allowing the unelected part of our government to wield sovereign power. And that was the innovation represented by the Brown decision in final analysis, I think, James.
You know, Keith, as I was listening to you offer that parting shot, I marveled at when you think of a decision of the magnitude of Brown and all of its ramifications. And what was it, the 60th anniversary last week? So the 60th anniversary, and certainly it was in the news for all of the reasons I just mentioned, but only in a praiseworthy manner. Everybody, as usual with the media, the establishment media, they speak with one voice on all of these issues, and there is more than one take on Brown. And again, folks, you find it nowhere else but on the political cesspool and the Liberty News Radio Network. And again, people are free to disagree with us, but I think certainly objectivity alone dictates that there should have been commentators on the alphabet soup major television networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CNN, etc., offering an objective critique on whether or not Brown was good or not, what it did to schools, and whether or not the way that the left ramrodded it down the throats of the American people by circumventing the rule of law was the way that they should have gone about it. And Keith, you didn't hear about that anywhere but here. And folks, that is why, again, just one of many reasons this show and this network are so important and so worthy of your support. And, you know, I'm not patting myself on the back here or patting Keith on the back or anyone else, but, you know, it takes effort to come in here and take these arrows and to talk about these things the way we do. I mean, last week on vacation, you know, I made the time to be on the show because this show is important and the work we do is important. We stand alone in the wilderness. I mean, tonight, you know, finding out, you know, having that great moment, you know, with my family, but leaving a little early to get here to do the show because that's how important the work is. No, the work is not more important than the family, and I would never put the show before my family, but I always find a way to make things work hand in hand. And it looks like Keith just crawled out of a chimney, or maybe he's auditioning for a role in Mary Poppins as one of the Swifts. But you know, but Keith is down here tonight. Why don't you tell him what was going on at your house before you came down to punch the clock? And you know, I tell you, know, we talk about us being a blue collar show. You look like you had a hard hat and lunch pail in your hand before you walked into the radio tonight. Why don't you get back on Brown? But first, tell him what went on in your life before you took the time out to come and do what you do so well.
Well, I put out a minor house fire, which luckily I happened to come into the house just as it was flaring up. So I got that taken care of. You know, the Lord watches over us. Pray for intercession and for protection in all things, and believe me, your prayers will be answered if they're sincere. Now, getting back to Brown, the thing about Brown is that it was obviously not the intention of the Founding Fathers that the federal judiciary should be the preeminent branch of the tripartite government that we have. In fact, it was Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Paper number 78 who said that the federal judiciary was the weakest and least dangerous branch of the federal government. It has now become the strongest and the most dangerous branch of the federal government, and has been throughout the modern era, throughout the past 60 years since the Brown decision. In fact, now it's beginning to bite back at the liberals, and the liberals are howling with outrage about it. But of course, they created Frankenstein's monster, and now it's turning on them. But that's, you know, that's the way Frankenstein monsters tend to do. When you create them, they soon prove to be beyond anyone's control. It's like letting the genie out of the bottle. Well, the power of judicial review is a genie that can strike against anybody. And it's a fearful thing. It's like fire. It's like what I was just encountering at my house. It's a, I think it was George Washington that said that it's a dangerous servant and a fearful master. So we don't want to have our government power wielded by parts of the government that are beyond the control of the people to change.
And with that, folks, we're going to take another quick time out, but we'll be back as the political cesspool rolls on tonight, right after these words.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the political cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQonline.com and click on subscribe now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQonline.com. Subscribe now.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. You just heard our announcer, Art Frith, the Lord of the Board, the Navy Chief, give out that phone number as he does so well during our bumpers. 1-866-986-NEWS. 1-866-986-NEWS. I know we had a caller from North Dakota on during the commercial break. He's not there anymore. We sometimes make our callers wait a long time, and we don't always open the lines up. And sometimes when people do call in, they wait for 30 minutes or more before we have a chance to get to them. But the lines are open now, so if you want to call in, take advantage of a rare opportunity to speak with us live and on the air. Keith wrapping up his thoughts on Brown. Again, folks, I say this, but you can't say it enough. Something we're very proud of. Thoughts the likes of which are rational. So that's good. Those rational and healthy thoughts are not represented in the establishment media anymore. And we're proud to give them a voice in life here on the mainstream airwaves tonight. Keith, back over to you. What's next in your bag of tricks?
Well, let me do a couple of wrap-up comments on the Brown decision, since I thought we were going to get a caller questioning those conclusions I had drawn. Let me just say this. It was obviously not the intention of the Founding Fathers or of the early leaders of our republic that the unelected part of the government would have any sovereign power. In fact, there had been numerous efforts by earlier Supreme Courts to assert a right of judicial review. In other words, that they were the final authority on what was constitutional and what was not. But whenever that power was asserted by the Supreme Court, as in Marbury versus Madison, as in the Indian Removal Acts of Andrew Jackson's era, and as of the habeas corpus violations of Abraham Lincoln, whenever the Supreme Court attempted to invalidate an executive order or a congressional enactment, a law, Congress and the executive blithely ignored the Supreme Court. For example, Andrew Jackson famously said when he had his Indian Removal Act struck down, which led to the Trail of Tears and the movement of the Cherokee Nation from Tennessee to Oklahoma, he said, "Mr. Marshall," that being John Marshall, the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court at the time, "has made his decision, now let him enforce it." That type of attitude prevailed until the Brown decision, quite frankly. And the Brown decision was a way to immunize a minority viewpoint from criticism. And it basically made all the other branches of the federal government subservient to the judiciary. They were the hand servants of the judiciary. The executive, for example, President Eisenhower sent federal troops into Little Rock to enforce the Brown decision, and that is in direct violation of the Posse Comitatus Act. The Posse Comitatus Act was passed by Congress right after the end of Reconstruction in 1877, specifically to prevent the happening of something like sending federal troops into Little Rock or into the University of Mississippi to enforce federal law. And, of course, that was blithely ignored. The way that they got around it was they nationalized the National Guard, which was basically the state militia, and sent them in. But that was form over substance, and any Supreme Court that really had integrity and wanted to enforce the law as written would never have acquiesced to either of those incursions as being violations of Posse Comitatus. But this is what happens when you invest sovereign power in unelected governmental officials. Now, we've got a phone caller now, Don from California. You can put him on now if you would, please.
Hello.
Yes.
Is this the political cesspool?
That's right, Don. This is Don from California calling in. What's your comment, sir?
First of all, congratulations to James Edwards on the impending birth of his son. Second of all, I wanted to compliment you all on your continued work on Brown versus the Board of Education, but I think you may have overlooked what I believe is in most respects the most evil aspect of this decision, which invented a new legal doctrine that established a possessory legal interest in the persons of human beings, which is the first and only such doctrine of possession since the end of the Civil War. The Brown decision, by its terms, first of all, vested blacks with property rights in the compelled physical presence of captive white children in integrated classrooms, and two, it forced public schools to maintain inventories of captive white children for distribution. Now, under slavery, there was no such thing as a constitutional right to own slaves, and the government did not maintain inventories of slaves to be passed around. If you owned a slave, you had to purchase it, rent it, win it in a poker game, or inherit it, or something like that. But the Brown decision changed that. The Brown decision vested non-white races with property rights and the compelled physical presence of captive white children and gave the government the legal power to force captive white children at gunpoint and bayonet point if necessary, as was in the case in Little Rock, Arkansas, of enforcing that possessory interest. That, in my estimation, is the heretofore overlooked evil of the decision of Brown versus the Board of Education.
Well, you make a very interesting point. That's definitely what happened with busing. They white children were considered pawns, and they were distributed throughout school systems via busing until these unelected bureaucrats, typically federal judges and their handpicked minions on school boards, made decisions regarding where these children would attend school. But the most important thing, you know, about the actual boots-on-the-ground results of the Brown decision, we judge everything by the biblical standard. And the biblical standard is this: be ye not deceived. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Can a good tree bring forth corrupt fruit? Can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit? Therefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. So consequently, if you want to judge Brown as being good or bad, look at the academic achievement of particular schools before Brown versus today. For example, look at East High School in Memphis, then in 1954, and now in 2014. What is that difference? Is that difference good fruit or corrupt fruit? Well, the test scores, when corrected for the differences they have now in the scoring criteria, are obviously lower now than they were then. There's not as much education going on in East High School, for example. And you can take any number of schools. You can take schools that have remained all black schools, like Booker T. Washington High School in Memphis. Was it better then or better now? Well, it's obviously better then. So something went terribly wrong with this social experiment, and it's time that somebody came forward and told the emperor he has no clothes. And thank you, Don, for your comment. I think it was very, very incisive.
Well, absolutely. And I want to also echo that, Keith, if I may, and thank Don for making a commentary so profound. I mean, that was an excellent point, excellent observation, great commentary. Our audience is top notch. I mean, you're talking about top shelf audience here. I brag on them a lot. I'm so proud of our listeners for their intelligence, for their morality, for, you know, every time we've met any of the people, Keith, who listen to us in person, they've just been above and beyond any conceivable expectations you could have had going in. And now I believe we have Mark in Texas. We may not have a chance to listen to everything Mark has to say before the break, but we'll carry him over if he doesn't get it all in. Mark, take it away.
Well, hello, folks. Let me first say it's an honor, actually, to talk to you gentlemen. I consider you guys at the vanguard or the forefront of the movement or whatever to protect our people, our heritage, and our history. And if I ever get a chance to write the history of our second Renaissance, the second European Renaissance, you gentlemen will figure prominently in that account.
Well, thank you for that kind observation. tell us.
Okay.
You know, I've always considered Texas to be in the vanguard. If we're ever going to be saved, I think the salvation is going to begin in Texas. So you've got a large responsibility down there, Mark. Tell us what's going on and give us your commentary.
Okay, the reason I called is, and of course, everything I have to say is with the greatest respect for you gentlemen, but over the past few weeks, I've noticed that you've been attacking Rand Paul as some sort of traitor or apostate or whatever to the movement. And I know he's had to take some politically unpalatable positions.
Mark, hold on right there. I promise we're not cutting you off. I promise we're going to let you say everything you want to say and more after the break, but we got to take this one. Stay with us, and we're going to let you say it all. We'll be right back, folks.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
If you want to experience the great outdoors in comfort and style, then you need products from Teton Sports. For any of your camping, hiking, or outdoor needs, Teton Sports has top-of-the-line products for any adventure. Our sturdy and lightweight Wilderness 55 backpack has a built-in rain fly and plenty of compartments and pockets, perfect for hiking the mountains or a weekend camping trip. And our zero-degree sleeping bag features Superloft Elite 4-channel hollow fiber insulation for warmth, as well as right and left side zippers to let you zip two Teton bags together. With an adjustable mummy hood and interior storage pockets, our sleeping bags are the best on the market. Teton Sports is all you need for any outdoor adventure. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman Warehouse, or Wholesale Sports. And next time you're preparing for an adventure, think of Teton Sports.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. We've got a log jam here, but we're going to work through it. Don't worry, the phones are lighting up around the country tonight. We have Mark, who has called in from Texas. We're going to let Mark make his point. Then we're going to go to our Washington, D.C. correspondent, Peter Scoop Stanton, with his regularly scheduled segment. And then we're going to get to Curtis in North Dakota sooner or later, I promise. But Mark, please tell us why you believe we're wrong about Rand Paul.
Well, I'm just thinking we need to be a little bit more generous before criticizing him, because of course his father was ideologically pure, but you can see he didn't get as far as he would have liked. And Rand Paul is just going to have to make some palatable compromises. You can't take on the military-industrial complex, La Raza, the NAACP, the IRS, the NSA, and the Jews all at once. If you do, you'll be crushed. And so he's trying to minimize his enemies by making concessions. And some of these concessions we don't like, such as the Stand With Israel Act. But until he's completely betrayed us by voting for war in Iran or something like that, I think we should give him a second and third chance, because the only political system that does not require compromise is a dictatorship.
Well,
and Rand Paul is just going to have to compromise to get further.
Well, listen, you make a point that is well noted, and I get emails about the Pauls, both Ron and Rand, people criticizing the fact that we cozied up so much to Ron, people criticizing, or not criticizing, but just being objective and offering us a different point of view on Rand Paul, as you've done. And some people agree, some people disagree. I think with Rand Paul, though, I would concede that there is a chance that he would vote constitutionally sound if he were to be elected to higher office or for however long he should stay in the Senate. But, you know, you're talking about these concessions, and he's made some pretty big ones. It's one thing not to speak out against something, but when he goes, as they all do, to the Wailing Wall and worships there, and the Stand With Israel Act, as you mentioned, opening up this minority outreach deal in Detroit that he knows is going to fall flat on its face. And then the immigration one is even the biggest one. I mean, and Keith, I know, wants to say a quick word about that. Not that you're wrong, Mark, or that we're right, but it's... I could be convinced certainly either way, but right now he's not high on my list. But is he better or worse than the others? You know, I would say there's a chance. It's at least open to interpretation that you might have some salvation there on some constitutional measures. But let's let Keith say something, and we'll get the scoop.
Okay, Mark, there's one key issue that you just cannot compromise on, and that's illegal immigration. What is happening throughout the Western world, in Europe and in America, is that the left has engineered a coup d'etat. They're pumping in the nearest group of third worlders. In Europe, it's Muslims. In America, it's Hispanics. And they're intending to adulterate the electorate so that a conservative viewpoint, a pro-European viewpoint, can never again prevail politically. As Bertolt Brecht, the German communist playwright, famously said in 1948, if you don't like the election results, change the electorate. That's what they're in the process of doing. That's the one key thing that you can never compromise on if you ever hope for conservatism, true conservatism, to gain control of the American government again. And this is the fatal flaw with Rand Paul, as far as I'm concerned. You know, he can give soul butter about Detroit and things like this, but allowing people to flood in here from the third world who are going to be natural liberals and natural Democrats and forever change our politics, sorry, I can't go with you there.
And I want to thank you for the call. And I would like to say this before we go over to Scoop. His points are well taken. And I can understand his argument 100%. And that's another thing that I admire so much about our audience. It's not just that they're intelligent. It's not just that they're benevolent, hardworking, all-American people. And to a man and to a woman, those who I've met personally, I can say that that is a fair assessment. Salt of the earth. It's that, you know, we're on here for 3 hours a week, and we're talking about a lot of different issues. And it's impossible for everyone in our audience to agree with us 100% of the time on 100% of the issues. And this talks about the maturity of our audience, that I've seen so many organizations fracture if you ever hit something that you're not marching in lockstep on. And so the fact that our audience can continue to be so supportive, even in the occasions with which they find... take issue with us on a subject, just goes to show that we've got the best audience in the world. Scoop, let's go over to you.
Okay, let me say this too while Scoop's waiting to get on here. The fact that we have these disagreements with our audience is because our audience is a thinking audience. Our audience is not taking cues from us. They think these things through for themselves, and we understand and respect that. Oh, thank you, Mark. Scoop, are you on the line now? Scoop, are you there?
Well, we thought he was there. You know, Scoop is a working man.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you, Scoop. There you are, buddy. Welcome.
All right. Here, no problem. I had to put more coins on the payphone. Good evening, Cesspool family. It's Memorial Day weekend here in the district, and it's the annual running of Rolling Thunder, which is tens of thousands of bikers, 99% of our military veterans, roll into the district for recognition of those who served, those who died in line of duty, remember those POWs, MIAs. And, of course, Washington, D.C. did absolutely nothing to welcome these people other than a blessing of the bikers at National Cathedral. The only remnants you see is that signs on the interstate saying that tomorrow there'll be delays for a special event and a couple American flags and a couple banners from the Wounded Warriors. Same thing happened last week with Police Week. Tens of thousands of law enforcement officers came in to remember those who died in the line of duty. They had a ceremony at the Judiciary Square Memorial where they have a wall of those who died in the line of duty. And absolutely nothing, no recognition, anything like that. However, every time it's Gay Pride Week, they roll out the red carpet for these wonderful people. But on behalf of all the liberal, pinko, commie, backstabbing, America-hating people, let me welcome the bikers to the District of Columbia for Rolling Thunder. Now to get into the meat of things. Dateline, Washington, D.C., once again. 50 senators sent a letter to Washington Redskins owner Dan Snyder asking him to change the name of the Washington Redskins. There'll probably be a snowball's chance in Hades as Washington Redskins are treated like war heroes over here in D.C. And tens of thousands of people pay astronomical prices to sit and watch a crappy football team. They pay up to $50 to park and tailgate outside a stadium. And of course, one of the people that signed the request to change the name was none other than Harry Reid, who has his closet is about as big as a football stadium himself, with full of skeletons. Dateline, Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah, well, just a minute. Let me just say this, Scoop. What doesn't our Congress have something better to do than to worry about hectoring some owner of a professional sports franchise into changing the name of his franchise? Is everything appearance, other people's perceptions the ultimate reality now? Or can we get down to making laws that will affect the lives of people? If we had a Congress worthy of the name, they would be trying to liberate us from this excessive taxation and excessive governmental control of our schools, of our health care, and all sorts of other issues. Instead, they're spending their time sending out missives to the owners of professional sports teams suggesting that they change the name of their sports team because they consider it to be politically incorrect. They have nothing better to do, apparently, than to enforce political correctness. This shows that Pat Buchanan was right when he said that the counterculture of the 60s is the establishment of today, and the establishment of the 50s and 60s is the distant culture of today.
Scoop, I know we're late getting to you, working through a couple of callers, so you get the last word this segment.
Okay, real quick, Detroit, Michigan, Charlie Duff, the Duffland, people in Detroit are afraid to get gas because there's so many carjackings. due to technology, you can't just take away, drive away in a car. You need to have a keys or whatever electronic device. So people are looking for a special gas station where they have a green sticker saying, this is under scrutiny of the Detroit PD, and we have we're open 24 hours. We have closed circuit television cameras. But again, people, if they don't need gas, or if they do need gas, they're gonna make sure they gas up before they hit 8 Mile Road.
Well, you got that right, and we do know from one of Charlie LaDuff's installments for Fox up there in Detroit that you can call in a murder. And I think what did LaDuff do as he was waiting in for the police to respond? I think he took a bubble bath, went around the corner, got food, came back, and ate his dinner, and the cops still didn't come. So
it was a home invasion.
Home invasion. Okay, that's right. That's right. That's exactly what that was. Nevertheless, so this is, the response of the great Detroit Police Department. Scary stuff. It's the way the rest of the country will look if diversity and multiculturalism are allowed to run its course.
As they say, the truth is stranger than fiction, and what's happening in America could never have even been conceived by our ancestors as recently as 30 years ago. Gay marriage is number one, as far as I'm concerned, on that hit parade.
And we got to take a break. We'll be back with more. Thank you so much for calling in tonight, Scoop. As always, we look forward to your report each and every week, and we'll talk to you again next Saturday. But for the rest of you, the second and third hour of tonight's live broadcast is right around the corner. Stay tuned.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.